Good morning. As you know, or as you may know, Sub-Saharan Africa is in the middle of a severe food security crisis, which in part is due to the lack of application of fertilizer to about 70% of the maize grown in eastern and southern Africa, resulting in low yields as well as unmitigated soil nitrogen depletion at a rate of about 42 kilograms per hectare per year. One potential solution for these low yields and nitrogen depletion is to apply fertilizer and to couple that with planting maize hybrids with high nitrogen use efficiency, i.e. hybrids that can yield more per unit nitrogen applied. However, for those of you who are familiar with African soils and with highly weathered soils, nitrogen is not always the only limiting factor. Other nutrients may be limited, and also in about 60% of the landmass of Africa, soils tend to be acidic, which can lead to toxicity when it comes to manganese and aluminum and iron. In light of this, the objectives of our study is to investigate the dynamics of yield response to nitrogen with these high nitrogen use efficient or high NUE hybrids in contrast to commercial commonly available hybrids, and understand the impact of nitrogen fertilizer on soil fertility over time in a continuous maize system, and to diagnose other limiting factors that might limit yield response in order to guide future management and breeding initiatives. The experiment took place in three locations, two in Kenya, Kiboko and Embu, Kenya, and one in Zimbabwe, Harare, Zimbabwe. As you can see, the rainfall was quite high at all three sites, but this rainfall occurred quite sporadically, so all three sites did have the risk of drought stress throughout the season. All three sites were iron and clay-rich soil. However, they varied pretty substantially when it came to their pH, as well as their organic matter, with Embu having a lowest pH around 5 to 5.6, in contrast to Harare, which is a slightly higher pH, around 5.5 to 5.8, and in Kiboko, the highest pH, 7.4 to 7.5. Harare also had a much lower organic matter at the surface, around 1%, in contrast to our two Kenya sites, which had higher organic matter, around 2 to 2.5%. The research design was a split plot with four replications, where the main plot was nitrogen at four rates ranging from 0 to 160 kilograms of nitrogen per hectare, and the subplot was hybrid with six hybrids, three of which were bred by Cemet for high nitrogen use efficiency, and three were commercially available locally. The plots were not re-randomized each year or each season, and so the same nitrogen rate was applied to the same plots each season, and all of the hybrids were specific to each site. So the hybrids for one site largely differed from those of the other. I'm not going to go into the details of the hybrids, especially because there are so many of them. But if you are more interested, I do have a poster tomorrow, so please come visit me. It'll be quite lonely if you don't. The experiment was first planted in 2010, spanning a total of 5 to 9 seasons, with 2 seasons a year in Kenya, 1 season a year in Zimbabwe. For this talk, I'm going to focus on the most recent season because we're looking at the long-term impacts of this maize system and of nitrogen application. Stover residue was partially returned at Kiboko, but completely removed at the other two sites. Phosphorus was applied at all three sites. Irrigation was applied as needed, and plants were thinned to their desired population. At the end of that final season, we sampled the soil from 0 to 90 centimeters at 5 depth increments, and we analyzed these samples for total and inorganic nitrogen, as well as maize extractable macro-micronutrients, aluminum, amorphous iron, pH, organic matter, texture, and bulk density. And we also sampled plants and partitioned them into the grain and the stover in order to measure yield, biomass, as well as analyze for total carbon and nitrogen and essential macro-micronutrients. As I mentioned earlier, we had four different nitrogen rates, ranging from 0 to 160, but while all sites had a zero nitrogen rate, the higher three rates varied depending on the site. So So throughout this talk, I'm going to refer to these nitrogen rates as zero, low, medium, and high. And as you may have guessed from the title of this talk, we're looking at the yield response to nitrogen, and it did differ depending on the site. At our low pH site, Embu in Kenya, yield plateaued at our lowest non-zero nitrogen rate. In contrast to in Harare, that slightly higher pH site, yield plateaued at the medium nitrogen rate. And in Kiboko, yield continued to increase with each nitrogen application. That graph is really important for you to keep in mind throughout this talk. And so I have these little keys for you throughout. So you'll see that on the x-axis, we have our nitrogen levels, and our y, the grain yield, and you can see a stylized depiction of the yield response to nitrogen, where Embu plateaus early, Harare at that medium rate, and Kiboko continues to increase the yield with nitrogen. Since we're seeing that there's not a consistent response to nitrogen at these three sites, it begs the question, what is limiting yield and the nitrogen response? And does the application of nitrogen fertilizer limit the availability of other nutrients and the uptake of these nutrients? Nutrient availability is largely related to soil pH, where at different pHs, different nutrients will be more or less available. And as I mentioned earlier, our three sites had different pH ranges, where Embu had that lowest pH range, around 5 to 5.6. Harare had the medium, around 5.5 to 5.8. And Kiboko had the highest, around 7.4 to 7.5. Around our grain yield icons, I put boxes for demarking their pH ranges. So red for low, yellow for medium, green for high, or if you remember back to driver's ed, red being stop, yellow slow, green go. When we're talking about acidic soils, manganese can often prove to be an issue. And when we looked at the manganese content, both below and above ground, at the different nitrogen rates at the different sites, we did see that there was more more manganese in the soil at that lowest pH site, which we confirmed when we looked at the ppm of manganese, and this is shown at the top surface depth, where the levels of manganese in Embu, our low pH sites, exceeded 500 ppm, which is usually the threshold for toxicity. We confirmed this toxicity when we looked at the stover, and we saw values shown there in green on top that exceeded 100 at our lowest pH site, which again confirms toxicity. Toxicity manifests itself usually in stunting, which limits the source for potential yield. In our other pH sites, we didn't see the toxicity effect quite as much or at all. Also, another risk in these low pH sites is aluminum and iron. And so when we looked at our lowest pH site in Embu, at those top depths, so 0 to 30, we did not see aluminum levels that would reach toxicity, so this wasn't an issue. However, when we looked at iron, and this is shown at the three sites, averaged over all nitrogen rates, with, again, the low pH site in red, medium and yellow, green in is the high pH site, we found that the two lower pH sites, we did have substantially more iron. And amorphous iron can prove to be a problem, particularly when it comes to phosphorus availability, since iron complexes with phosphate in the soil. And as we expected, when we looked at phosphorus in the soil, we found that there were much higher levels in the soil in our high pH site, in contrast to sites which had more amorphous iron, which again we confirmed when we looked at the drastically different ppm levels and when we looked at the stover, but more importantly the grain, which I show here in yellow on the top. We see in percentages that the high pH site is really sufficient in phosphorus, in contrast to our two lower pH sites, which are borderline deficient. Phosphorus, when you have a lot of it in the soil, however, it limits the access to zinc. And so we thought it was important to investigate that as well. and we found, as expected, but at our high pH site, which had a lot of phosphorus, we didn't see a lot of zinc. But when we looked at the actual uptake of zinc into the plant, we didn't see deficiency even in our high pH site, even though we didn't see much in the soil. But we did see deficiency level in our medium pH site in the grain. However, this in this case is not really linked to the pH, but it's rather linked to the fact that our Horaris at that medium pH site had low levels of organic matter. And organic matter tends to complex with the zinc to keep it soluble to allow for a plant uptake. Although we didn't take a penetrometer with us, I can pretty confidently tell you that there was compaction at the sites. And this became evident because our sampling process was quite strenuous to the level that mallets were commonly used. And when we wanted to get to that deeper depth of 60 to 90 centimeters, it usually took two strong men to get the probe in and maybe three to get the probe out. Resulting at the end with a series of broken probes and mallets. Compaction is important, especially when it comes to micronutrients, because it limits both the flow of nutrients in the soil or through the soil, as well as root penetration into the soil. So to wrap up, at our low pH sites in Imbu and in Harare, we had high iron and high manganese, and we had low phosphorus. And at our low organic matter site, we found low zinc as well in the plant. In contrast to a site which had a consistent response to nitrogen, as far as we saw, we had high phosphorus levels, sufficient zinc, and low manganese and iron. The iron is going to limit our access to phosphorus in the plant, manganese leading to stunting, so lower amounts of biomass, and the zinc is going to lead to chlorosis, which limits the photosynthetic capacity and thus yield. So in conclusion, environmental conditions can limit the benefits of nitrogen fertilizer application to maize hybrids with high nitrogen use efficiency. And detailed soil analysis should be conducted prior to any testing of these high NU hybrids in order to make sure that we can see the response and the nitrogen use efficiency of these hybrids. But we can take these detailed soil analysis, especially if they're conducted at multiple sites, and incorporate them into existing soil maps in order to provide better recommendations for farmers through extension agents by giving them better tools for their job. I would like to thank our funders as well as our partners for this project, in particular CIMMYT, who managed the sites throughout the seasons, and Bill and Melinda Gates, who came up with the original question that led to this project, as well as my colleagues back at Purdue University. And with that, I would love to take any questions that you have, and thank you for your time.
So would you say the first 20 kilos of N is always worth putting on?
It seems to be like that you see enough of a response that, yeah, it would be worth it. I don't know if the economics for it. I think that would depend on how much it would cost in that area.
And quickly, did you see any differences in hybrids among at the low end?
I did, but it was inconsistent from season to season when it came to yield. So when we looked at the actual nitrogen use efficiency, we didn't really see any differences, but we did see other more nuanced things that would provide kind of a hint that there were differences that we could see in more, I guess, optimal conditions.